It's 9:30 on Thursday, the 27th of March, and time for Uncensored with Penny Faree, proudly sponsored by IPSS Electronic Security.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Uncensored, the show where we highlight critical issues affecting our region. Now, the North Coast continues to make headlines this week with two major stories dominating regional news. First, we examine the narrative surrounding the recent Pietermaritzburg High Court ruling on the eviction application brought by Kwadukuza Municipality against hundreds of shack dwellers illegally occupying land along the P445, also known as the Belita Drive extension. Now, this story has actually made national and international headlines, but several media outlets have distorted the facts, which have oversimplified the issue and framed it as a race conflict. We'll unpack how these portrayals miss the real issues and discuss the implications of urban development in Kwadukuza. And we'll also dive into the ongoing investigation into the 35.7 million KDM heist, a scandal of leaks, corruption, and the troubling lack of accountability. So we'll jump into the first story. On the context of the first story, Kwadukuza Municipality has been engaged in a legal battle since 2022 to evict shack dwellers who illegally occupied a parcel of municipal land along the P445. Now, this stretch of land runs from Mshali Country Club on one side, you've got Caledon Estate and Brooklyn Estate and the Office Park on the other, and it also leads to the new Dukuza substation currently under construction. The land invasion began in 2020, but escalated in 21 when, during the height of the COVID pandemic, evictions were temporarily suspended. By 2022, the municipality had initiated legal proceedings against the shack dwellers. At that point, the shack dwellers movement, Abashlali Basim Jondolo, ABM for short, its Zulu for residents of the shacks, had stepped in to represent the legal occupiers, whose numbers had grown to nearly 500 by then. In 2024, KDM was granted an eviction order, which ABM contested. Now, the case between KDM and the legal occupiers was once again heard earlier this month on March the 14th. However, ABM revealed that the number of people they were representing has increased from 425 to nearly 1,000 households. As a result, the court adjourned the case to ensure eviction notices could be served to all the new occupiers. Now, to address this, the municipality's legal team has scheduled an ex parte application for May the 26th. This means the municipality asked the court for permission to serve eviction papers to unrepresented occupiers without their immediate participation. If the occupiers oppose the eviction, they'll have the opportunity to submit their responses at a later date. Now, this is always under discussion. It's been reported that the judge dismissed the case, and some media outlets even headlined it as a victory against forced evictions. Now, this is incorrect. The case is still ongoing. Another media outlet actually covered the story with just ABM's voice that lacked context and transparency. They didn't allow anyone else a right of reply, and the other entire emphasis was on race and class. In a statement, KDM's communications director, Sifiso Zulu, he clarified that the illegal occupiers had admitted to occupying the land unlawfully, and while they do not oppose the eviction, they have set conditions for their relocation. So Zulu emphasized that the case is not about when the eviction will take place, it's when the eviction will take place, not if. So the ABM movement representing the shack dwellers in this case has been very vocal in the media about the eviction. They've framed it as a racially motivated attack on the poor. They've accused the Dolphin Coast Residents and Ratepayers Association of colluding with Kwadukuza Municipality in what they call an effort to remove black families from what they describe as prime land. Their narrative was further amplified by Sunday Times over the weekend, which ran a headline stating race and class war in wealthy Belita. Now, to give you a sense of their stance, here's ABM's Secretary General, Tapelo Mohapi. He explained their position on the matter. And Spo Zikonda, he's the founder of the movement, also makes a statement towards the end.
Ratepayers Association, who have taken Abashlali Basim Jondolo in this particular area to court and also driving them away. They are calling them rubbish, human waste, not human beings, and that they must be, and they're not worthy to live in this area. This area is a prime land, and therefore the poor and marginalized should not live in this area.
The resident of Sihlalangengani, of Shaga's Head, of here in Salt Rock, Hlanganani branch, Etete and others who are continuously being forced out of this town, that we are going to fight it. We are going to fight it in streets, we are going to fight it in court. As we speak, we have filed our papers opposing the imminent evictions in the Pietermaritzburg High Court.
The poor and marginalized, particularly the working class, have the right to live in the cities. These people cannot sweep their gardens, they cannot clean their homes, yet they do not want people who work for them to live among them.
Okay, so as it happened on multiple occasions, whenever an illegal settlement grows and a municipality steps in to evict the shack dwellers, the ABA movement steps in to defend these eviction orders. They were founded in 2005 by Sibiso Spoor Sikonda. It's a South African grassroots movement, the largest in the country, and it represents the landless and the marginalized. Now, the movement initially defended existing settlements from evictions and forced removals. However, it's later expanded to support new land occupations. Sikonda has stated that Abashlali is part of a global struggle against states and police forces that are dismissive of human rights. And in 2021, the Swedish government actually recognized Spoor for championing the rights of the homeless. And he famously said, Spoor's famously said, when we are denied water and electricity, we connect ourselves. When we are disconnected, we reconnect. Now, this movement promotes far left socialists and strong communism, Marxism ideology of a classless, stateless society. In a communist society, there's no private property. In the means of production, people live in a system of economic equality. Now, let's hear from Dion Viljoen. He's the chairman of DOCRA, who has publicly responded to the accusations made by ABM. Here's his take on the matter, emphasizing that this is eviction is not about race or class, but about ensuring the rule of law and addressing the social issues stemming from illegal land occupation. So take a listen to this.
The invitation to come on air and comment on the situation that's taking place in and around the informal settlement at Shaka's Head. I would like to share some facts with the community that may or may not have made it into the press or into the public domain. Firstly, KDM launched court proceedings against the settlers on the specific piece of land in the second half of 2022. And the case then has been ongoing from that point. KDM said that this land was earmarked for a business park, although we also heard that it was donated from a farm for a school. The legal proceedings were brought by KDM alone and funded by KDM. DOCRA has no part in any legal proceedings, nor do we contribute any funds toward this or any other case that is sub judice brought by KDM. At no point has DOCRA ever called for the eviction of any person or groups of people from this property. In late 2024, we launched a petition for the enforcement of municipal bylaws due to verified reports of serious contraventions with regard to safety, security, pollution, illegal dumping, noise disturbances, unlicensed trading, and illegal connections to water and electricity supplies. Residents in the area, many of whom happen to be DOCRA members, have reported multiple cases of assault, robbery, and have photographic evidence of the pollution caused by these fires. Furthermore, DOCRA, in partnership with CAP, which is the Communities Against Pollution, have had data to back up these reports of air pollution. These bylaw infringements are a threat to the well-being of our members and the community at large, so we decided to do something about it. No person, no matter where they live or whatever their income bracket is above the law. Many of the residential estates in this area who have been affected by these bylaw infringements are members of DOCRA and constitute hundreds of rate-paying households. When they brought this issue to us, we were bound by our mandate to stand up for them and to hold KDM to account to enforce the law. Certain groups have used this petition as an opportunity to further their own agenda and to try and draw us into some kind of debate or argument about class or race, which is utterly preposterous. DOCRA is a completely apolitical, non-racial organization with members of all races and income brackets. Strangely, these groups seem to be reluctant to confront the municipality's failure to provide adequate housing, an issue which DOCRA has pushed for answers on for many years. The shroud of anonymity surrounding the organization's structure, source of funding, and any international or political alliances also draws into question their real motives. Our role and our mission is to hold KDM to account and to represent the residents and ratepayers of the Dolphin Coast, even when that may be difficult or uncomfortable.
Yes, it's a social issue. I just want to say, with no urban planning, there's no infrastructure in place to support these households. And let's be clear, there are no services on this land. There's no sewage infrastructure, there's no waste collection, no running water, no electricity. And even environmentals have asked, where is the sewage going? Where is the waste being dumped? And obviously the burning that's taking place, we are all feeling it. And CAPS, the monitors go mad certain times of the night when the burn happens. And obviously with plastic, which is very toxic, it affects a lot of people with issues with health, you know, marginalized, you know, people of no race. It cuts across everybody. So this is not a matter of race or class. It affects everyone. And CAPS does run 7 monitors. They run an independent equality network of 22 monitors, which operate across KZN, and 7 of them are located within a radius of the Ballito area. And the recent data doesn't lie. It's very concerning. The pollution levels are high. But what is also not being touched is the effects of the Sharker's Head and the surrounding communities. A lot of the residents in Sharker's Head have said that the schools have become so overcrowded. Some of the classrooms have more than 50 children per class. And there's also drug-related issues. There's 2 illegal shebeens that are operating in the area, which have further exacerbated the social issues. And also, obviously, there's a lot of muggings. A lot of domestic workers walking along that road have also been attacked. And then let's not focus on the issue at hand, the proliferation of the mafia-style interests in the supply chains of various sectors of the economy. Now, if that had been sorted, I think the taxi industry runs a monopoly, so buses cannot operate in this area. So one of the contentious issues was, if they are moved away to a piece of land that's outside of the Ballito area, then it's going to affect the transportation, because then they're going to have to pay for transportation. But if there were normal buses running, you know, and you take buses that were operating like in the old days, that would obviously curtail the problem. There's also the land that was earmarked for housing development. A lot of it remains undeveloped due to mismanagement, corruption, and complete incompetence. And despite being set aside for much needed housing, lots of parcels of land sit idle, which has contributed to the growing housing crisis in the region. Now, we've got a backlog of almost 70,000 houses in this region. So this is a major problem, and it's got many layers. So when you take a view from the top, you question if the whole battle has an angle of malevolence. Because when you also look at ABM, it's a very strong movement. They supported the EFF in the elections last year, which, you know, obviously they didn't do so well. But when I approached a lot of the communities who did speak to me off the record, none of them wanted to go on record in Sharker's Head, because currently there's such an active campaign going on that's been playing out between the MK, who've trying to secure Sharker's Head Ward 4. There's the by-elections going on the Ward 28. So there's a lot of political movement going on, and all of them want to capture a strong majority. I mean, these people in this parcel of land, there's over 1,000 people. So it could affect the way a local ward moves.
Only if they are able to vote.
Yeah.
And apparently most of the people in that settlement are not.
Yes, that's also...
So they should be then seen as a low-hanging fruit for action on the part of the wonderful municipality that has been spectacularly absent without official leave with regard to the entire saga. Because had they acted timely and effectively, none of this would be an issue now. Now it's a major issue.
Yeah, it's
You've
a
got
big
a
problem.
Thousand households or 1,000 people camped right opposite one of the poshest golf courses in the region. The housing estates around them are all up in arms because the property prices clearly are affected by this illegal settlement. And yeah, who do you blame? So if you really want to look where to blame, I mean, it's very obvious. Follow the bouncing ball. Where did the problem come from? Why was it not dealt with effectively? And why has it been allowed to proliferate for so long? More importantly, why is there not immediate remedial action being taken? Is there land available? Yes, there is. We know that there was a farm purchased for the settlement of people that are looking for settlement for way over the market value. We know that that's a common cause, that farm that we discussed in one of your previous shows.
Yes.
That was sold for many, many, I think
59 million rand.
59 million rand, yeah. It was worth...
About seven.
There we go. Yeah. Gives you an idea. So the municipality was very happy to dish out lots of money for a white elephant. Why? Not sure. Why is it a white elephant? Well, because it's got a land claim on it, because it has no services. It's a million miles from anywhere, completely unsuited for any kind of worker that wants to operate in this area to live in, quite frankly. So what a waste. Now back to the drawing board. Sifiso Zulu, the spokesperson, says it's not a question of if they're going to evict these people, but when? Well, that's the question. When?
Yeah, well, the next date's on
when, Sifiso? You give me a call, please. Let me know, because we would be very keen to then promote and publicize the effective actions being taken to remedy this shocking social human tragedy, because that's what it is.
It is.
These are human beings involved in this thing. No one wants to live without services. No one wants to live in danger and in squalor. No one wants to live in a kind of desperate limbo. People want access to where there might be a chance to make some money, legally or illegally. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And we have a responsibility collectively to take care of these people in a way that is manageable for all.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science. It's what these idiot politicians have been spouting for years about. Yes, we're going to give you everything, but there's nothing on the table so far. So there it is. Where does the problem lie? 100% squarely at the door at what is the building in Stanger that they live in, or that they work in? Because they don't actually, they don't work, so they just sit in. They sit in.
Well, council is, but you know, it is. It's a massive social problem. But you know what is concerning is how politicians get onto the bandwagon and spout race and make it divisive. And you go online and
well, that's the easiest way of getting votes, isn't it?
Yeah,
let's find an enemy that is a soft target. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Trot out the old coconut again. It's absolutely undeniable that in the past there were vicious inequities in our society. Under the apartheid regime, there were horrors perpetrated. And yes, that was a long time ago, folks. I can point back to various other conflicts around the world where horrors were committed. And one needs to move on, acknowledge where the problems were, acknowledge where the mistakes were, not to repeat them. But for heaven's sake, let's move beyond this now and find solutions to the problem. I mean, people in South Africa like each other. We do.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to go for a stroll, chat openly to just about anyone from any rank and file. And if you come with a smile and a kind of warmth, you get repaid many, many fold. It's a wonderful country full of wonderful people. But the political parasite class is what is driving us
division.
Apart.
Division. You know what makes me laugh? You know, the spout imperialism and white monopoly capital and socialism and communism. And you actually ask someone, what does that mean to you? And when you go to any township, they are the most industrious capitalistic people I know. You know, they're entrepreneurial. Entrepreneurial is exact opposite of capitalism and socialism. You know, there's always an opportunity where people see a little need and they set up something and they create a business for themselves because of the lack of, you know, opportunities. So it's very, there's a big entrepreneurial mindset in townships, and you go there and it's thriving. And then these politicians come and they start spewing, socialism and communism, and yet they arrive. A lot of them say this movement, the leaders are very well dressed, they drive very fancy cars, and they arrive there and they're preaching to the poor about equality and, you know, all for one and one for all, and yet this is all they wearing clothes made by capitalists and drive cars as well.
By capitalists. I think you mean under those sweatshop regimes of socialism and communism. But we just have to, you know, one can ism these things into a coma. The bottom line is a situation that on our doorstep that needs to be resolved, and it needs to be resolved rapidly. Now, if you have a ward councillor, I suggest you get hold of them and say, what are you doing to make sure that this thing is pushed to the top of the agenda? And then collectively, let's get the wheels in motion. Let's get Mr. Zulu on the line. Why don't you bring him into your next show and ask him to come and explain to anyone that cares
to
listen.
And Jetra Banda, the Sharkers Head ANC councillor who doesn't even live in the ward, he should also be on the show.
Whoever the ward councillor is for that area should be on the show.
Yeah.
And let's try and get some resolutions on the table, and then we hold them to the deadlines that they stand or fall by, if only. Jeez.
Yeah.
Feel much better after that rant. Thank you, Penny.
So now we're looking at KDM's 35.7 million heist, which has unfolded in the past week. Now, a leaked report that was compiled by APSA during a special council meeting last Thursday revealed the name of 15 beneficiaries who received funds from the 35.7 million cyber fraud, which targeted Kwadukuza Municipality's primary bank account on January the 31st. The report was compiled by Absa Bank, and it lists 7 companies and 6 individuals who received the stolen funds, with 2 beneficiaries still unnamed. The largest payment was 4.4 million rand, which went to a distribution company, while the smallest amount was 678,000 rand, which was given to an individual account. The money has largely been retrieved, except for they're saying that 30 million has been retrieved. The 4-point-something million that was paid to the one company, it's a distribution company, that money actually went into the account and vanished immediately, and they aren't able to trace it right now. And strange.
Why can't they trace it?
Well, the money, basically what happened is that the bank didn't want to disclose the details of this company because it's a long-standing client.
Of course, the bank.
Yes. So the Kwadukuza Municipality went to court to try and get the identity, which they did. And now they have the identity, but there's no money. So now they're doing another special High Court application, which, by the way, is costing about 300,000 rand to actually freeze the assets of this company. Now, I've been online and I've looked at this company. It looks like a shell company. It's got no digital profile.
Who are the directors?
One director. I'm also not, can't disclose the name yet because, this is still under investigation. And he has allegedly got links to business ties with the municipality. And the director's name was also, it was a very generic name. I mean, when you look at it online, he doesn't have a social media profile. And a lot of them are linked to celebrities and, you know, in various countries. So it's almost like it was premeditated. And what they're saying is a lot of the accounts that the money went into, they were frozen immediately. There were 2 accounts that actually the money was moved immediately. So they feel that they knew that this was going to happen, and the money was transferred out of the account as soon as it hit the account. And what
has anyone been brought to book over this?
Nothing
so far?
Yet. It's still a pending investigation. What was very interesting now, there's 3 of the names that people have unpacked. Now, social media has blown up with this as well. 3 of the names are linked to the mayor. One is an alleged it has ties to the mayor working at a salon.
Now, this is the mayor that was the ward councillor of a ward that received 200 million rand for flood damage that never happened.
Yes, that is
the same
new
guy,
mayor.
Mr. Ali Ngidi, the mayor of Kwadukuza. associated with these wonderful people that have been connected to the theft of money from Guadeloupe.
Well, it hasn't been proven, these allegations, because the 1.7 billion rand flood money that was given to the region to repair the floods, I mean, where have all the repairs been done? We were highlighting the one repair from the flood damage on the road by going onto the R102, that big sinkhole that is causing massive obstructions in the morning. We've got the Flag Farm Road, we've got the other one by the Rain Farm, all those damages. There's no funds. I mean, that should have been allocated.
So that was in the ward that was allocated. Is it 1.2, not the 2 million?
Yes, it is. It's just part of the 1.7 billion rand.
1.7. So I got the figure of 200 million rand allocated to that.
So
his, was that right?
Ali's ward was given 200 million damage.
And of course, this is not alleged. This is on the record, is it? I'm asking the question.
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
So the ongoing investigation is not transparent. The public have been given very little access to relevant updates. And the statement's only been released after social media has gone public with information from leaked documents. And council, all the council meetings are in committee. So that bars media and the public from attending the meetings. They're all very secretive. Reports are given, then they're taken back. And, you know, even the opposition councillors and even the ANC councillors are saying, you know what, this needs to be open knowledge. This needs to be made public. These were funds that, you know, that pertained to the rate payers.
Okay, but until it's been tested in a court of law, it's all allegation.
Yes.
And I need to stress that, folks. I am not making statements of fact. I am merely suggesting that this is allegation, and that we're checking facts and making sure that there is due process being followed, because we don't want to end up in a legal argument either. But so far, fact, no one has been held accountable for this heist of a huge amount of money from Guadeloupe municipality. Many people have been linked to the bank accounts through association.
Yes.
Many folk that are still in a public service at the moment.
And companies, the company's name, some have got business ties with the municipality.
Okay. So there's a lot of smoke.
Yes.
When is there going to be a little bit of a fire?
Well, we're hoping that something's going to be resolved. I mean,
but we've been hoping for years that something's going to be resolved.
This happened on the 31st of January. Now we're going into April. You'd think that would have been resolved. And they said that the ramifications now, KDM are spending 300,000 on legal fees to try and retrieve money from a company that looks like a shell company, that looks like it doesn't exist on paper. I mean, that's 300,000. And then the interest that was lost from the 35.7 million, while they were trying to freeze it and get it out, apparently that was also substantial. I think that was about 3 million rand. And that's caused massive, repercussions along the line. So it's
winds of change are necessary now, folks. There's an election coming up next year.
And also a by-election's coming on the 2nd of April. Today is quite critical in council. They're tabling the budget. You know, the draft budget's been tabled today, so we're going to be unpacking it with a roundtable discussion next week with key people, seeing what we are going to be facing in the next year of, 2025, 2026. And all the pressure that's been put on the ratepayers. It's going to be a very interesting news cycle, and it just keeps getting more intense. So we're going to be looking at it next week, the budget, inviting key guests here, and then also following up on this issue with KDM and the 35.7 million, and if there is going to be finally some accountability for that.
You've been listening to Uncensored with Penny Faree, proudly sponsored by IPSS Electronic Security. Back again in a week's time, next Thursday at 9:30. Do not miss it.